to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
It's been kind of funny trying to keep the conversation from working itself out off the air. So Gary Baker is, I know, anxious to talk with our guest, Richard Steenen, about the subject of Bitcoin, among other things. But Richard, first of all, I want to welcome you back to the Internet Advisor. It's a delight having you with us.
Yeah, it feels like a new era.
Yes, it has been. Now, you have, of course, you continue to maintain your relationship with IT Harvest, am I right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay, which is an organization that you started. But recently, you stepped out of a role that you were holding with Blanco, I believe. And yep. We now have the opportunity to talk a little more freely with you. And so I'm delighted that you could be with us here on our program on this holiday weekend. It's good to have you here.
Yeah. Oh, it's great to be here. Great to be a free agent again.
Let's talk for a little bit at the beginning of this, because it's a conversation we started just a little bit ago. Gary, you were saying that in offline that in the past, you and Richard have had conversations about subjects like Bitcoin. So let's maybe, Richard, you could start off by giving us some of your opinion of what do you think Bitcoin is, and is it something we need to keep our eye on, or is it going to be just kind of a fad when the bubble bursts?
Well, I'm reminded that Gary and I, you know, participated in a land rush. It wasn't a gold rush at the time, but a land rush, jumping on the internet, competed in a friendly manner way back in the day, the mid-90s.
And Bitcoin and crypto. We met because we were competitors, and we've had some great conversations. Right,
yeah, totally. We work together too, and Bitcoin has the same feel of, or you know, cryptocurrencies in general, as you know, a land rush and literally a gold rush. Right, people are going after the money. I'm afraid, you know, for Gary and I, it's too late to jump on this train. Other than as investors, right? You could speculate completely. When Bitcoin hit $2,000 a coin, I was like, no way would I invest now, right? Because it was 12 months before that, it was like at $2. You're not going to invest in it. And of course, at $3,000, you say the same thing. And at $5,000, $7,000, we're coming up on $9,000, I think, coming up quick.
Yep.
And, you know, you don't want to be the stupid person who jumps in at 12,000 because, of course, that's when it goes to 1,000. But, man, there are some people out there, my sons included, who bought it when it was pennies per Bitcoin. And, you know, it was a significant financial benefit to them. And I've met people that are Bitcoin millionaires. It's quite cool to see. So I'm a huge proponent of cryptocurrencies, right? The idea that you could have a relatively frictionless transaction ability online. So if I want to pay somebody some money, I can do it without a PayPal taking 3.5% to 7.5% of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, how do you deal with what Gary was talking about before, that essentially there's nothing to back it? There's no Fort Knox?
Yeah, but
go ahead.
Yeah, but there's math to back it. So this week somebody, and the math is solid. This week somebody published a report that there are 39 countries that use less power per annum than is used to generate Bitcoins.
So it's their own rarity in the generation or the mining of Bitcoins, right, using computer power. It's their own rarity that is the commodity. It's not
right.
It's not any currency or gold or commodities. It's just the rarity that it and the time it takes to create a Bitcoin in computer power.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah. And you don't have the, you know, for the dollar, you've got the Federal Reserve, who since 2008 has just been, you know, pumping money into the banks. And they literally do that by changing numbers in a spreadsheet. They say, okay, bank, now you've got $10 billion instead of $9 billion. And the banks turn around and they buy treasury bills with it. You know, it's just, it never gets down into the economy. They don't loan money to anybody's in the in small business knows you can't get a loan from a bank.
I'm not good much with math, but I don't take much comfort in hearing that what's behind Bitcoin is math. That's numbers, just numbers. Is there, you know, I guess maybe I'm naive enough to think that, for instance, in America, our currency is backed by something.
It's backed by the full faith of the government, but it doesn't. We're not on a gold standard anymore, so it's not really backed by anything, is it? It's just that everybody trusts that it's good.
Yeah, and it's the petrodollar of choice, right? So all of the world's resources are priced in U.S. dollars. So
soon to be Bitcoin. It sounds like
soon to be Bitcoin. Yep.
You know, and I imagine banks are trying to come up with this and experimenting with this now. I mean, legitimate banks.
Yeah. You know, yeah,
sure. Banks are, plus, you know, the explosion of different types of coins and the amazing money that's been raised through initial coin offerings, ICOs. It's definitely in a bubble because everybody's trying to do one. My favorite out there is Steem, STEEM. And the idea is that you get some sort of coin credits whenever you comment on a post or create a post. So it's really meant to encourage content creators with good stuff, right? And the more, if you create good content, you'll get more Steem coins and eventually make money doing so.
Now, explain that to me. How does that work again? I'm curious. You create content? Yep. Any kind of content?
You go to steem.io, I think it is, and it looks a lot like Medium, you know, the blogging site.
Mm-hmm.
And when you create a new post, you earn Steem somethings. And when people comment on it, they earn Steem credits for commenting and for liking and all the rest. So it's like encouraging social interaction like you do on Facebook, but you get something from it instead of Facebook getting everything.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right, Gary, your comments now.
I get the same when I fly Delta. I get frequent flyer miles.
Yeah, yeah. How's that working out for you?
I can exchange
them for something. You get the right to fly more on Delta.
Yeah, I can exchange them for, you know, for more flights, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
so,
exactly.
You know, I'm curious. What happens if somebody figures out an algorithm to create, clandestinely to create more Bitcoins and start feeding them into the market all over the blockchain?
Isn't that called counterfeiting?
A little bit here, a little bit there.
Not possible. Can't be
done.
Well,
it's happened, right, in other currencies. So why wouldn't it happen in Bitcoin?
Yeah, because of the math. It's beautiful. That's like suggesting that somebody could all of a sudden crack all crypto, which, yes, there's a 0.0001% possibility of that happening. But the way it's laid out now, you just can't do it. So, Gary, you'll understand this. In order to recalculate the blockchain, and this is the race condition that goes on, you know, every few minutes in the blockchain world, is you have to take all the new transactions and calculate a new hash with a certain number of leading zeros.
Right.
And an MD5 hash, as you know, takes millions and millions of calculations in order to find something that matches a certain pattern. The Dooku or the Flame virus that the NSA created, they estimate costs $250,000 just to create that hash collision. That the Bitcoin miners that get rewarded for doing all that work, they get a Bitcoin every 10 minutes for doing it. They have to do all that math. That's why they need data centers full of computers crunching numbers, which is kind of wasteful. No question about it. There's a lot of energy being spent doing this.
Mm-hmm.
The power to do it, and then the heat, the power to cool the machines that are doing it.
Yeah.
But it is really, really hard to break into. Now, the problem is there's all this politics going on. There's a team of five developers who have complete control over, new additions that they might want to make to the whole algorithm, and there's politics involved, and And that's where the weakness is,
no,
the human element.
My understanding.
So how would somebody crack this? So how many? Why would there be a bubble burst? How could that happen?
But as soon as people go, "Whoa, this is overinflated," that's a bubble. That's how bubbles burst. You
know, right.
There's no market for it.
Yeah, I mean,
the trouble is, there's so few bitcoins, and it's so hard to generate new ones that the, you know, the philosophy is, oh, the bubble can't burst. But whenever you say that, the bubble bursts.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
They just said it. So
there's a fixed number of bitcoins that could be generated every month, and and the number is fixed at a maximum, and I forgot the number. Was it 40 million?
No.
42 million or 42,000? I forgot the exact number. I know it's a big discrepancy, but it's 42. So what's the answer to the ultimate question of the universe? It's 42. So I think they based that number sort of on that, which is kind of weird. But
and we know when that's going to happen, right?
Yeah, 2148, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so that leads to my theory. So the inventor of Bitcoin was Satoshi Nakamoto, and he published a paper, and boom, it just happened. So here's my theory. He's from the future, and he came from that year in the future when he needed this to be there. And he came back here, published a paper, and then he went back to the future. He's just enjoying whatever profits he got out of it.
I like it. I like that.
You and I both love him. Science fiction.
Yeah, we're both science fiction guys.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going to stick what I see here on Craigslist. It says free horse manure. Must be able to pick it up yourself.
So much of this does sound, I mean, like people talking gibberish. I'm sure there are a number of other people who, like me, have just kind of bottomed out a few minutes ago on the vocabulary that's being traded back and
forth.
I
am just upset with myself that 5 years ago, if not more, when I was sitting with a friend of ours, Jim Crenshaw from work,
yeah,
and he was telling us about this, and I didn't go out and buy a bunch of Bitcoins. That's what I'm upset about.
Well, you know, there'll be another one sooner or later. You just give it some time. Hopefully, you'll be around to see it.
You know, I missed.
Right, guys,
we all missed.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to continue this conversation with Richard Steenen, who is our guest here, along with our crew. Let me reintroduce our very special guest, an old friend of ours, Mr. Richard Steenen, who is with us by phone. And Richard, it's always good to talk with you. He's Chief Research Analyst at IT Harvest, also an author, a published author of There Will Be Cyber War and Up and to the Right and Surviving Cyber War, along with a book that you co-authored with Mike Brennan, Cyber Stiletto, as well, which is available, I believe. Is that still available on Amazon, Richard?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. Look for them online there as well. We've been talking about Bitcoin, and I'm glad that we have somebody on here who is as enthusiastic about talking about this as Ed and I are curious about it as well.
Well, we're curious, and it's about cryptocurrency in general, but the first was Bitcoin, yes.
So you had a question, Ed, about...
Well, Richard touched on this a little bit ago, but a lot of startup companies are doing IPOs and they're somehow incorporating cryptocurrency or their own unique cryptocurrency into the initial public offering. And I didn't quite understand how that played out. Richard, could can you explain that?
So Ed, they're actually ICOs, initial coin offerings. So they go, hey, you know what? We're going to create a new coin, and it's going to have this difference from Bitcoin, and it'll be more stable or whatever. And they basically have the initial coin offering where you can buy the coins before they've even spun this thing up. And so you get in on the ground floor for the next one, the next Ethereum.
Okay.
Yeah. And there have been some that have raised, I saw one number, $35 million in 15 minutes of launching. So,
interesting.
And of course, as soon as that happened, everybody, and I've been approached by at least four different people that said, we're going to fund us with an ICO. You know, and it's like, you know, Bitcoin is good for certain things, but it's way overkill for other things. People are coming up with, let's use Bitcoin as a identity management system. And it's just way too much, right? You don't need that for a lot of functions.
Okay, mm-hmm. So they're coming up with their own coin called an ICO, and when they get the money, they're actually using it for, is it exclusively for coin use, or are they actually going to, development cost and for some product they're going to be selling millions of? Like a GoFundMe.
It's like a GoFundMe, but the product has the basis is going to be some sort of cryptocurrency that they just created.
Oh, okay. So this is just basically cryptocurrency. Okay.
Guys, doesn't this sound a little bit like Chuck E. Cheese coins? I mean, they have no value.
Well, actually, I guess they do have value because I was out on the net and I said, who accepts Bitcoin as payment? And some interesting people do, and some really strange people do. WordPress will take it.
Oh.
Overstock.com will take it. Subway will take it.
Very interesting.
Subway.
Eat fresh. Microsoft Microsoft will take it.
Oh.
Virgin Galactic, which includes Virgin Mobile and Virgin Airlines, they'll take it. CheapAir.com will take it. Expedia will take it. Steam, the gaming platform.
Well, Steam's been taking it forever. Yeah. I remember that.
And then you got some strange ones, like the Pumberry Tavern in London, England is a pub that will take it. The Pink Cow.
I was in a pub in Amsterdam that took it.
Yeah.
And of course, since people didn't have it, you had to go to an ATM and buy some first, and then you could go to the bar.
Yeah, there's a couple other weird ones, like the Pink Cow is a diner in Tokyo that takes it.
Yeah, Gary probably could have got his boat down there for 50% off if he used Bitcoin.
Well, I should have used Bitcoin because it cost me other mucho dinero here.
Wait
a minute. Could I just have used pesos? Yeah. How's the difference? What does the exchange rate concept still work?
There's exchanges that will quote you a market price. Trouble is, they're doing the arbitrage thing and they're charging you a percentage every single time. So it no longer becomes frictionless to start moving between Ethereum and Bitcoin, for instance.
And if Gary's really nervous, just let him know that yachtbase.com, a Croatian yacht charter company, also takes Bitcoin.
There you go.
Oh, dear.
So I won't be taking Bitcoin anytime soon, just to let anybody know. Don't bring yours here.
Hey, Richard, one of the things I want to see if we could shift just a little bit from, and I've got to get to these new companies that you've seen on the line, malware companies or for battling it, et cetera. But, Gary, you mentioned before blockchain. Could either of you or both of you give me somebody, anybody, help me with what is blockchain?
Well, I want to get what's the difference between, Gary tried to explain it, but wasn't blockchain also based on the same math that was used for the development of Bitcoin? Didn't they evolve at the same point? Okay.
Completely. Yeah, one and the same. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That was misleading, Richard. They were developed at the same time, but blockchain is not a cryptocurrency.
Correct. Okay. But they use the same math.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
It's the technology behind Bitcoin. Right. And what Bitcoin was a open ledger. And the idea is, imagine a small community and, some guy says, I'm going to start a bank, but I'm going to publish, make totally transparent every single transaction. Because, if you dig into the weeds, a bank, you deposit your money and it disappears, If you deposited dollar bills, disappears into an account and they don't track the dollar bills anymore. They just track a number in your account. But it is totally dependent on your trust relationship with the bank and also the trust relationship with the federal government who issues the value of those dollars. Mm-hmm. The blockchain was just, hey, how can we publish all the time so everybody can see that register of transactions? And then they just figured out how they can do it with cryptology to make sure that it wasn't nobody could fool with it and change it inappropriately. And that was the birth.
Hmm. All right. Now, what I want to get to, Richard, is something that since you recently now, as you said before, kind of freed up to be able to make public comment on some of these things. When you surfaced again in public like this, one of the things that you saw were there were a number of companies that have appeared on the horizon, excuse me, companies like Polyverse and eSentire and Verodin. Talk about them as, and are they producing products that our listeners can go and go online and do they offer better protection than Avast and some of the other ones that are out there right now?
Yeah. So we're not there yet. You know, so if you're looking for better protection than the Avast of the world, you definitely have to look at Malwarebytes, for instance. Right now, if I had Windows, I would run Malwarebytes on top of Internet Essentials from Microsoft, and I'd be very, very confident that it's in pretty good shape. But what's the exciting parts are happening in this world of, okay, how do we counter these really sophisticated attackers, cyber criminals, nation states that are trying to do all these things to us? And one company, Polyverse, has got a really, really great solution. You know, they're selling it to enterprises right now, but I won't be surprised if eventually, you know, Microsoft starts reselling or incorporating some of the stuff they're doing. So, you know, every vulnerability in an operating system relies on knowing things about the memory stack and the location of where things are in memory, because you're trying to overflow memory and insert instructions and all this stuff. So one method of countering that is make sure that you use different OSs for different things. So if you were a smart person, you would use Linux for your servers, and you'd use, you know, Macintosh, this is for you, Cal, for your desktop activities.
Thank you.
Good move,
and,
good move.
And there's some things, and then you'd use Microsoft for Outlook and Microsoft Office 365. So, and that's great, because that means that a single worm or virus can attack all of your systems at once and won't spread as far, and this is the whole monoculture versus multiculture argument. So Polyverse says, okay, let's make every single machine a separate operating system, and they do that by just scrambling the memory addresses of all of the function calls. And there was a company like this that did this years ago called Santa Security, but they, you know, they did it once, you know, so when you install your Linux server or your Windows server, it was scrambled at that time, and a attacker could eventually, you know, figure out a particular vulnerability in your system. But Polyverse changes it continuously. You know, it can be every minute. It can be a brand new machine. So you've only got a few minutes to figure out what's the zero day and can I attack it? And then boom, everything changes a few minutes later.
So, all right.
I love it.
You know what? In our first hour of the program, we talked with Robert Capps, who's with New Data Security. And we were talking with him and getting his evaluation of this a speech technology called VAuth, which has been developed by the University of Michigan. But the bottom line was that he was saying that, and maybe this is, see what you think of this, that the holistic approach, in other words, using many different kinds of ways of identifying somebody, is far more secure than saying, okay, I'm going to use only biometric, or I'm going to use only voice, or I'm going to use only whatever. But that the using a symphony of these different things is actually the most secure way of doing it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I could share a Gartner 101 lesson that we all learn. When a vendor says holistic, insert the word imaginary.
Right.
But agree. I mean, I certainly agree that you have to have layers of defense, and you have to look at, stopping an attacker at each layer, just like you do in a, you know, fortified establishment, right? It's got to have walls and all the rest.
I really wanted to talk about and get Richard's opinion about, if you use the blockchain, are you exposing all of your transactions to a lot of people? Does that mean our
because the blockchain is not anonymous. So you are, yeah.
Yeah, so privacy goes out the window.
Not totally, because you can have a private wallet, right? You don't, when you install a wallet, you don't give it who you are and your birth date and all the rest. So it's just that, you know, when you buy, you know, something illicit, it's also you bought a subscription to the Wall Street Journal, and they could figure out who you were, because it's all there.
And GM, if they used it to transact business with a tier one, everybody will know that they're now working with that tier one.
Right. Yeah. Good point.
If I buy a house with it, you know, using blockchain instead of a bank, then everybody knows what I paid for the house.
Yeah. Which is not necessarily a bad thing, is it? It's better than
I don't care about my privacy, but
yeah. It's better than the stupid numbers Zillow comes up with.
All right, Richard, hang on. We're going to wrap things up with you in just a minute. I want to talk about some of these other companies, eCentire and Verodin as well. Maybe you got some thoughts on them. Richard Steenen is our guest here. We're talking about cybersecurity with one of the world's great authorities and our dear friend, Richard Steenen. Back to wrap things up on the Internet Advisor in just a moment.
Back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Well, thank you very much for sticking around with us here on the Internet Advisor for a highfalutin conversation. Richard Steenen is with us. He is the chief research analyst at IT Harvest and a published author and a good friend of ours and the international speaker on cybersecurity. And we've been talking about highfalutin finance with Bitcoin and blockchain, as well as talking about some of the new companies that have risen up. I want to underline something you said, Richard, before in the middle of our conversation, and it was kind of offhanded, but you're saying that if you had a Windows platform laptop or computer, the combination of security that you choose would be malware bytes and Microsoft Security Essentials?
Yep, okay. That will do it.
Or the Defender for Windows 10.
The Defender. That, in other words,
Defender,
what you get with Windows 10, right?
Yeah, the free stuff, yeah. I can't tell you how many people I went to in the last 2 weeks and got rid of their McAfee that was prompting them to purchase it. And they're running Windows 10. And I'm uninstall the McAfee, and Microsoft Windows Defender will assert itself and protect you.
Microsoft is there.
Yep.
Which brings to mind an interesting conversation I had this week. So I talked to the founder of a company called Polyverse, and, you know, Skype conversations with full video. And all of a sudden, this guy is explaining how he was the technology advisor to Bill Gates at Microsoft. During the tumultuous, 2000 to 2003 timeframe, when MS Blaster and Melissa and all those worms were just destroying their reputation for security.
Mm.
And he's the one who came up with this idea of, he didn't invent it, but he's pushing forward the Polyverse thing that I described in the last segment.
Yeah. Wow. That is fascinating. Go ahead.
Yeah. I immediately realized, boy, he had the right experience to do what he's doing.
Yeah.
So there's another cool company just north of us here in Detroit, 3 miles up or 3 hours drive to Cambridge, Ontario, called eCentire. And as you might know, Gary, you remember, I left Rustnet to join Netrex, one of the first managed security service providers, and that whole industry is all about managing people's firewalls and intrusion detection systems and logging, right? And it's a frustrating business to observe from the outside because they don't really add any value. They just, offload your requirement from various compliance regimes to log everything and alert on stuff, right? But if you're setting up alerts in the security world today, you're getting tens of thousands, possibly every hour, and you just can't filter through them all and understand what to do. So eCentire came at it about 10 years ago, And he said, look, we're not going to do that stuff. We're going to put a sensor in your network. We're going to watch your network traffic. And when we see things that are unusual, outside the realm of the normal behavior, we're going to kill them. So they do TCP/IP resets. There's shun attacks. So finally, there's a company out there, I call it MSSP 3.0, that actually does security for you. So you sign these guys up, and at the last company that I just left, that was the first thing I did when I was put in charge of security, was reach out to them. I need it, all five offices, deploy a sensor, and give us this real-time eyes on glass, people in their office in Cambridge and Cork, Ireland now, are stopping attacks. And they've got customers that will say, wow, these guys saved our entire company when somebody clicks on the wrong link, they get their machine infected. You can immediately tell the machine starts doing things that's abnormal. And then they just cut off its access to the internet and the rest of the network.
It's like having an IT department that's your own IT department focused on security.
I remember in the early days, Novell Networks had the same relationship with McAfee. So if a computer became infected, the McAfee software would notify the server, and the server would block any further communications to that client years ago. I mean, this was in the 90s, and this is just the next evolution to that.
Excellent. Yeah, there was one other one out there, and we were running out of time here. I want to make sure you talk about, was it called Verodin?
Yeah, Verodin is, when I heard their pitch, I was like, wow, you guys are new. You're really doing something that I've never seen before. So there's this idea of penetration testing, right? So you're supposed to go out and hire a firm. They basically scan your network for vulnerabilities. And in some cases, they'll actually try and exploit those vulnerabilities and get access to something on the inside of your network. So very expensive. It can cost $10,000 to $50,000. When I was at PwC, we charged $90,000 to do this.
Wow.
But that was PwC. Of course, you got to pay a lot. And so there's an industry already around that.
Mm-hmm.
These guys talk about doing, full-on testing of your security procedures. And the way they do it is they deploy what they call actors on the inside, which are just virtual machines that look like your regular computers or servers. And then they deploy actors on the outside in the cloud, and they've got thousands of attacks. And they run the attacks from the outside actors to the inside actors, and they monitor what gets reported to your logging systems like SIEM.
That's interesting.
And they'll say, hey, we just executed a completely successful attack of, whatever, wannabe or some ransomware attack, and nothing detected it. So you've got a problem. And Or they show me all these test cases where it was detected, but nobody had written a correlation rule in their SIEM, their Security Information Event Management System, to alert on it. So... Yeah, they got a log
fascinating.
Blown away.
Richard, we're down to about a minute of time with you. What's in the future for you?
So I'm jumping both feet back into the consulting business. I left my job a week ago, and I've already just reach out to a bunch of friends, and they say, oh, my gosh, we can use you. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, you're like Mr. Gary Baker there, never out of a job in that sense.
And Gary, I wasn't desperate because I didn't call you, because I would have.
and usually I call you, so.
Yeah.
It's a mutual admiration society. Richard Steen, thank you so much for being with us. We look forward to having you on the air again soon.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Take care.
Great to talk to you.
And Mr. Gary Baker, good talking to you down there in Florida. Hope you have a great week.
Same to you, and same to everyone out there listening.
Smooth sailing, as they say, Gary. Take care. And then Ed and Cal, thank you so much for being with me here in studio this week. We've got a great week coming up ahead of us, folks. Look for this podcast on Sunday nights on our internetadvisor.net page. For the rest of the crew here, my name is Foster Brown, wishing you a very, very good week and a safe one, too. Don't forget to get in touch with us with your questions by going to internetadvisor.net and sending us an email.